It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama deploys U.S. force in hunt for kidnapped Nigerian schoolgirls. And President Putin questions legitimacy of Ukraine's presidential vote. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. U.S. President Barack Obama has deployed 80 U.S. military personnel to Chad to help find more than 250 schoolgirls kidnapped by Islamist militants last month in neighboring Nigeria. In a letter Wednesday to the U.S. Congress, Mr. Obama said the U.S. personnel will support the operation of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance aircraft over northern Nigeria and in the surrounding area. He said the force will remain in Chad to hunt for the children until it is no longer needed. The Pentagon said the deployment will consist largely of Air Force personnel operating an unmanned, unarmed drone from a site inside Chad. State Department officials and federal investigators are also aiding in the search. Russian President Vladimir Putin is raising doubts about the legitimacy of Ukraine's presidential election, but said Russia is moving its troops away from the border to help create favorable conditions for Sunday's vote. Mr. Putin said in Shanghai Wednesday that it will be difficult to build relations with people who come to power during what he called the continuing punitive operation in eastern Ukraine. During a visit to Mexico Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry took note of the announced troop pullback and said he hopes the situation is at a good moment where the Ukrainian people can determine their own future.
And I don't personally think that Russia signing a deal with China for gas that they've been working on for 10 years has any impact on what is about to happen in Ukraine, which is the people hopefully are going to have a chance to have an election. And we welcome President Putin's statement 2 days ago that he has instructed the troops that have been bivouacked along the border of Ukraine to move back to their home bases.
Read more about the Ukraine conflict at voanews.com. China and Russia, after a decade of negotiations, have signed a $400 billion natural gas deal. The 30-year deal approved Wednesday in Shanghai calls for Russia to send gas from Siberia by pipeline to China. After the pipeline is built, the gas could flow by 2018. Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping watched in a grand hall as energy executives signed the agreement that appeared to serve the immediate political interests for both countries. Pakistan's army has launched a series of airstrikes against suspected terrorist hideouts in the country's remote northwest and says it has killed at least 60 militants. Sharon Bain reports from Islamabad.
The military said Wednesday that a number of hardcore terrorists, important commanders, and foreign fighters had died in the targeted strikes in North Waziristan, an area rife with militants. One eyewitness to the bombardment, who asked not to be named, said a number of non-combatants had died in the strikes. He says the strikes started at 2 a.m. and then happened again hours later. Many houses of common people were destroyed and a number of people were killed besides the militants. Common people were also affected by the shelling. The military said large caches of arms and ammunition, including material for making homemade bombs or IEDs, had been destroyed in the strikes. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Islamabad.
Police in Tehran have released six Iranians who were arrested for posting a dance video featuring American singer Pharrell Williams' hit song Happy on the Internet. In a post to the picture-sharing website Instagram, one of the female dancers says she was released Wednesday, while in a post to Twitter, the International Campaign for Human Rights quoted a source close to the families of the dancers, saying that all people who made the video were released except for the director. The clip shows three men and three unveiled women singing and dancing to the song on rooftops and in the streets. On Tuesday, Tehran's police chief called the dance video a vulgar clip, which hurt public chastity. Islamic law enforced in Iran says women must cover themselves from head to toe. I'm Bill Michaels in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Barack Obama authorized the deployment of U.S. forces in the hunt for kidnapped Nigerian schoolgirls.
We're flying unmanned reconnaissance flights over the areas in which we think it's possible for the girls to be. We've not seen anything that indicates their location at this point.
That's Pentagon spokesman Rear Admiral John Kirby. A Nigerian girl who survives Boko Haram attacks testifies before a U.S. congressional panel. Nigeria's ruling party wants U.N. sanctions on Boko Haram and its financiers. Former Egyptian President Mubarak is sentenced. We'll have analysis. And the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan calls on fighting parties to respect all agreements.
It's important for the people of South Sudan that the fighting stop so that not only can humanitarian assistance come through, but so that the confidence to begin to address the political issues underlying the conflict.
Donna Booth is the U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, and Zambian President Michael Sata testifies in court on his own behalf. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama has deployed 80 U.S. military personnel to Chad to help find more than 250 schoolgirls kidnapped by Islamist militants last month in neighboring Nigeria. As viewer Jeff Selden reports from the Pentagon, the troops will support drone aircraft that will search for the kidnapped schoolgirls.
Pentagon officials say the 80-member Air Force team will fly unmanned and unarmed aircraft over northern Nigeria, and that Chad's proximity to the search area will cut down on travel time, allowing for round-the-clock surveillance. GlobalSecurity.org's Tim Brown tells VOA via Skype, launching drones from Chad also gives the U.S. more flexibility.
They're probably just going to be used for wide area search and surveillance, and then support for if there happened to be a hostage rescue attempt or any kind of on-the-ground deployment of troops.
The move, announced in a letter from U.S. President Barack Obama to lawmakers, is part of Washington's ongoing effort to locate and support the safe return of the girls kidnapped last month by Boko Haram, the militant Islamic sect that's been terrorizing Nigeria. But it's an effort that's been complicated by concerns about the Nigerian government and weaknesses that Brown says have been further exposed by Boko Haram's actions.
They're showing the fact that these guys are not able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and they're corrupt, and they are.
The new drone flights from Chad will be in addition to ongoing U.S. surveillance efforts.
We're flying unmanned reconnaissance flights over the areas in which we think it's possible for the girls to be. We've not seen anything that indicates their location at this point.
Pentagon spokesman Rear Admiral John Kirby, at a briefing earlier this week, said so far the flights have produced little.
People have, said it's a needle in a haystack. It's a needle in a jungle.
U.S. military officials remain convinced Boko Haram's split the girls up into smaller groups and may be moving them around, making the search even more difficult. But they say the U.S. will do all it can to find the girls, short of sending in combat troops, or as they put it, short of putting boots on the ground. Jeff Selden, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party, the PDP, says it is hopeful the United Nations Security Council's Al-Qaeda Sanctions Committee will place sanctions on the militant group Boko Haram at its planned meeting today, Thursday. Abdullahi Jallo, spokesman for the PDP, says President Goodluck Jonathan's government petitioned the UN body to blacklist the Islamist extremists following the recent abduction of over 200 schoolgirls and the increase in violence. Jallo tells reporter Peter Clotty that with support from the international community, financiers of the militants could be exposed and punished for the crimes committed by Boko Haram.
There is no doubt that this thing is not coming too late. It's better to be late than never. There were a lot of move as regards to the world condemning the deadly act of this organization. For the Security Council now to come up, to sit down, to discuss this organization as a terrorist organization is really a welcome development. As Nigerians, and especially the Ruling Party, are very happy with this Security Council development, and we are sure the world will definitely support the stand of Nigerian government to show to the world that, yes, the government of PDP are all out to stamp out this deadly faction of the society that have infiltrated into the society, killing people without any reason.
There are some people who are saying that it seems the government has been very ineffective, one, in providing security as one of its cardinal mandate, which is to protect unarmed Nigerians against any harm. What do you say to that?
Well, Peter, there is no doubt, as the president has said it clearly, that, look, the army and the military paramilitary were ill-equipped for quite some time. He has not missed word on this. And at the same time, PDP is ruling Nigeria for the past 14 to 15 years now. I, as a PDP, how do I take arm to go and kill my followers? That is not possible. It's a propaganda against the PDP. This is something that has been put in the minds of our detractors.
There are suggestions that there are some politicians who are financing this Boko Haram insurgency. What do you think should be done about this?
The question is simple. If Nigerians among the citizens of Nigeria are sponsoring these people, the American government and other developed world have now came into this thing. And not only to provide logistics as to how this Boko Haram will be steamed out from the society. They are equally going to pick out who are their finances, because from the reports available that this group has a lot of money.
Abdullahi Jallo is the spokesman for Nigeria's ruling People's Democratic Party, the PDP. He spoke with Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. A Nigerian teenager who survived an attack by the militant group Boko Haram is in Washington telling members of Congress her family's story. VOA's congressional correspondent Cindy Singh reports from a dramatic day of testimony on Capitol Hill.
The Democratic Party's ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, Elliot Engel, introduced Deborah Peter, the sole survivor of a Boko Haram attack, to reporters.
And I want to take this opportunity to thank Deborah for having the courage to come here and speak with us. You will see when she talks what a fine young lady she is, a young lady that would make any parent proud. And it really drives home the horrific things that have happened in Nigeria.
Peter then told the story of how her father was targeted by Boko Haram because he was a Christian pastor in the same village where the schoolgirls were recently kidnapped, Chibok. She said three men came to her home and asked her father to renounce his Christian faith. When he refused, they shot him in front of her and her 14-year-old brother. She was 12 at the time. Afterwards, they debated on whether to kill her brother, then shot and killed him and left her alone between the two corpses. Peter, now 15, came to the United States with the help of a Christian organization and is going to school in the state of Virginia. She had this message for the Nigerian government.
I want them to, like, maybe send armies to find the girls, or maybe, like, they should help them for the people that lost their family, like, to come school here, like me.
At a hearing on Boko Haram later Wednesday, House Foreign Affairs Chairman Ed Royce said while the world is deliberating on what to do about the kidnapped girls, more are being snatched and more people are being targeted for death.
The difficulty is that Boko Haram is in a process of expanding their terror and the frequency of these attacks, the attacks on girls. That's been an evolution. I mean, as they've intimidated and frightened the Nigerian military, they're now to the point where a lot of military units have run away.
Royce says Boko Haram has burned down 500 schools in Nigeria. He says these are extraordinary circumstances and called for U.S. forces to help Nigerian units track down the girls and to plan and organize a rescue mission. Republicans and Democrats on the committee expressed their support for more U.S. help in rescuing the schoolgirls and in curbing attacks by Boko Haram. Cindy Sane, VOA News, on Capitol Hill.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 22nd, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. The time of Daybreak Africa is 15 minutes past the hour. A Middle East analyst says he's not surprised by the three-year jail sentence given to former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak for embezzling public funds. However, Nizar Al-Sayah, chairman of the University of California, Berkeley's Center for Middle Eastern Studies, says he believes once Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, the frontrunner in this month's Egyptian election, comes to power, he will most likely pardon Mr. Mubarak. Al-Sayah tells me that although the sentences given to supporters of former President Mohamed Morsi have been excessive, they too, especially those with lesser charges, could also most likely be pardoned.
It appears to me, if you look at the exact nature of the sentencing, is that Mubarak is being accused for having ordered certain people to engage in finishing the architecture and the structure of two houses which supposedly accommodated Gamal and Ala Mubarak. And that, in a sense, the people who were given these orders, at least according to that ruling, were simply following orders. But they ended up basically providing the service from the budget of the state. So what Mubarak is sentenced for is having given orders to use public money for private gain. And in this case, it's gain for his two sons.
Professor, is this a matter of whether the court is trying to cover its own back for the way that it has been dealing with supporters of former President Morsi?
No, I actually don't believe so. I think that the sentence that has been given in this case is a very appropriate sentence in terms of its term. However, one absolutely cannot ignore the fact that the sentences that have been passed against Muslim Brotherhood members have been quite excessive. However, there is a political implication, of course, and this is one where the current transitional government and Sisi, who is the expected president of Egypt, are very much going to still benefit from this sentence. It is, in fact, my expectation that once Sisi comes to power, which is likely to happen in the span of a week or 10 days, Egyptian public opinion is definitely being readied by the Egyptian media, private and public, for some kind of a pardon for Mubarak, possibly also for his sons. And I would suspect that that pardon will also likely include, though not a pardon, but rather a reduction in sentences, as well as the release from jail of many members of the Muslim Brotherhood who are of the lower ranks.
Professor, it's just about five more days before Egyptians go to the polls to elect a president. And there's an interesting report that's out that says that General Sisi has won about 95% of the expatriate vote. What do you make of that? Is this a coronation?
In the first place, I have to say that the fact that the expatriate vote turned out so much in favor of Sisi is not a surprise whatsoever, and is, in fact, an indication both of his popularity with Egyptians inside and outside of Egypt. But it is more so also a product in terms of the percentages itself. It's a product of who's voting. I mean, as you probably know, one of the very large percentage of the Egyptians who live abroad happen to be Copts. Some of them are, in fact, people who dislike the Muslim Brotherhood very much.
Nizar Al-Sayah is the chair of the University of California, Berkeley's Center for Middle Eastern Studies. He was speaking with me from Berkeley, California. The U.S. Special Envoy to Sudan and South Sudan, Donna Booth, says now that an international donor community has made pledges of more than $600 million to help the people of South Sudan, it is time for the government and the opposition to keep their commitments. Booth says they must allow aid to be delivered to those affected by the fighting, regardless of which side they are on. Andrew Green reports.
Speaking at the close of the Oslo Donors Conference, Special Envoy Donald Booth says it is time the warring parties stop fighting and allow food, water, and emergency supplies to reach the hundreds of thousands of people who need it.
We need to hold the leadership to the agreements that they've signed. It's important for the people of South Sudan that the fighting stop so that not only can humanitarian assistance come through, but so that the confidence to begin to address the political issues underlying the conflict, that those talks can proceed.
Booth says the next step is to deploy regional troops to monitor a cessation of hostilities agreement and guarantee that the entire country is open to aid workers.
The monitors will be able to go out and be able to explain to the entire world exactly who is responsible. And then, as we've heard today, in terms of those who obstruct delivery of humanitarian assistance, the same for those who violate the cessation of hostilities agreements, there will be consequences for them. So we need to get the monitors out there. We need to ensure they can operate in a safe environment. And I think this will do a lot to make a reality out of the agreements that have been signed.
Officials with the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, a regional body that is providing the monitors, says their mission has been delayed as they wait for the troops to arrive. There is still no date set for the arrival of the additional forces. Foreign Affairs Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says his government will live up to its end of the bargain.
The government and the President of the Republic is on record that they will be given easy delivery of food. You also know there is fighting in the area, and these agencies, their security is important. So they will need to coordinate with government so that they are warned ahead of time, so that they don't go into areas where they might meet some instability.
Opposition officials were not available for comment after Booth's presentation at the conference, but said earlier in Oslo that they were also committed to helping to ensure that humanitarian aid reaches as many people as possible. The United Nations estimates 4 million people face alarming food insecurity in South Sudan due to the fighting that raged for 5 months across the country after a political argument between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar turned violent. For VOA News, I am Andrew Green.
A spokesman for Zambian President Michael Sata says the president wants to show the balance between free press and protecting individual rights. George Chela, special assistant to the president on press and public relations, says Mr. Sata has got a reputation to protect and that it is right to seek judicial corrective measures where he feels aggrieved. This comes after President Sata testified in court Wednesday on his own behalf in a case in which he sued the Daily Nation newspaper of Zambia for defamation. The paper had alleged that President Sata helped his friends avoid large debt to the state-run Development Bank of Zambia. Presidential spokesman Chela tells me that the fact that President Sata went to the courts should give ordinary Zambians the confidence that they too can do the same.
I think the president feels defamed, so I think he decided to take remedial measures using the existing judicial process, and the president decided to take stand himself and try and prove his innocence.
When I read the story, it was kind of a little unusual to me for a sitting president to appear in court to testify. What message is President Sata sending?
So I think the message the president here is trying to send is he's trying to show a balance between press freedom as well as individual rights.
So what would you say to those who say it's a little petty for a president to appear in court?
The president has got a reputation to protect James, and it's his right where he feels to seek remedial measures through the judicial process of the country where he feels aggrieved. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. In the first place, he's also a citizen, and I think he has got to exercise his rights and freedoms, especially where his reputation is concerned.
There's been this criticism of certain governments in other African countries that they are now using the courts as a way to silence their critics or the media from writing critical articles about them.
That is not the case in Zambia, James. If I may say, the Zambian judiciary, I think, is totally independent from the executive. And the fact that the president could go and try to seek remedial measures in the court process, that in itself gives enough confidence to the general citizenry that they can do the same.
You mentioned press freedom in Zambia. There's a criticism that since Mr. Sata was elected, a number of journalists who have been critical of his administration have been arrested.
That is not true, because as we are talking right now, no journalist is in jail. And you may wish to know that ever since President Sata took over the office in Zambia, the Ministry of Information and Broadcasting has issued more broadcasting licenses than any other government in the history of this country. We have literally liberalized the airwaves than anyone else has ever done.
So when is the next court day, and do you expect that the president might show up again when necessary?
I think if the court requires him, he will certainly show up. Well, what I can tell you, this is new to the Zambian politics, has never been done before, but also if you look at the history of Michael Sata as an individual, you will understand why he's doing what he's doing. Because the number of defamation cases which he has taken to court as minister and also as an opposition leader, and he has cleared his name right in the court process. So this is the approach which he has done before, and with him, I think he's comfortable with it. He wants to show the balance between press freedom as well as individual rights, because he has always done that throughout his political career, except this time around it's different because he's head of state.
Giorcella is the special assistant to the president on press and public relations. He was speaking with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Pulse, and here is Mark Olma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with Olympic news. Over 2,500 boys and girls from Africa's 54 nations have converged in the Botswana capital, Gaborone, for the Africa Youth Olympic Games starting today, Thursday. Over the next 10 days, they are vying for medals in 21 disciplines, including athletics, badminton, basketball, boxing, canoeing, cycling, fencing, football, golf, judo, karate, netball, rowing, rugby, swimming, table tennis, taekwondo, tennis, triathlon, on volleyball and weightlifting. Meanwhile, South Africa's University of Pretoria in the capital Tshwane has many students set to compete at major international athletics and cricket events this year. The Vice Chancellor Cheryl Delaray explains their vision behind investing heavily in sports.
And our vision is to offer our students a holistic education. And so we try to educate the whole person by giving sporting opportunities and cultural and arts opportunities to all our students.
Well, some of your students here are Africa champions in various events at junior level. You also have like Orazio Cremona, the Africa shot put silver medalist. Was this the expectation, or have your athletes exceeded the expectation?
Well, the athletes, I think, really make us proud. But the real, what's behind the success is a strong foundation. And the strong foundation is built on investing in people, and specifically the youth.
Given all this success, have you set any specific goals for them for this year?
Yes, well, one of the sources of pride for us as a university is how many of our athletes and sportsmen and women are selected for our national teams. And when they're given an opportunity to perform in the African Championships, and hopefully many of them will be selected for the Commonwealth Games this year. And we're looking forward to those opportunities. For our cricket team, it'll be the first South African university team participating in the Red Bull University Championships in London in July this year.
That was Cheryl Delaray, the University of Pretoria Vice-Chancellor, speaking in Tshwane, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. We'll see you tomorrow. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, May 22nd.
The real problem with fighting insurgency here in Nigeria is the inability of government telling Nigerians and the world at large the real truth. That's why this terror issue is spreading. Let's open the theater of war to the world media to operate in and extract information themselves. When this is done, we will know the whole truth. Insurgency cannot be stopped by telling political lies. Enough of this deceit. I am Okechukwu Ajaka of Ezolisa family on the Sado Kingdom, Anambra State, southeast of Nigeria. Thank you, VOA.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's it for this Thursday, May 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clutty and Ricky Shrike, as well as post editor Mark Ullman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a very good day, Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.